This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's that time of week. It's the time where we answer your questions, your most pressing questions related to intelligent medicine. We've got a really exciting lineup of experts in store for you today. Yours truly, accompanied by Layla, the very same Layla who graces the title of this segment. Q&A with Layla, our weekly segment in which we answer questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. And so welcome, Layla. How are you?
All right, Dr. Hoffman. How are you? Hello, everybody.
Good, good. So let's tackle questions. But first, a little bit of a comment on one of the news stories of the day. You suggested that we touch upon this.
The $2 billion award from... verdict for people who suffered via Monsanto Roundup.
Right. So this is
$2 billion.
This is the third huge award that has been levied against Bayer, which has now inherited the woes of Monsanto. They thought it was maybe a clever move to sew up the GMO marketplace along with the rights to market pesticides like glyphosate. By obtaining Bayer for billions of dollars. I think it was like a multi-billion dollar deal. Now they have a liability of $2 billion. Of course, it'll be reduced, I think, by the court ultimately, because that's almost a symbolic judgment. So when I actually saw the press conference by the attorneys, and what it is, it's actually a very unassuming couple. You know, like sort of Ma and Pa Kettle, you know, representing sort of the middle America consumer perspective on glyphosate. And what happened was the guy developed non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, the husband, and then so did the wife. And they used this extensively because they were clearing their property, their driveway. They had some story that was plausible. And in the press conference, the guy could barely talk, and the attorney said, "Excuse me, you know, he's trying to make a statement, but he has trouble. He has chemo brain, and he could barely articulate." But the wife, they handed the mic to the wife, and in a very plain speaking way, she said, "You know, when we started using Roundup, they said it was completely safe. There was had there been any warning that it could cause cancer, we wouldn't have used it."
Yeah.
You know, and that's and so they were flanked by their, you know, eight attorneys, you know, because this is a high powered case. And the attorneys certainly stand to gain monetarily.
It's career making
for them. You know, it's a watershed kind of thing. And the other thing is it's gonna open the floodgates for additional litigation. There are literally thousands of people queued up to sue Monsanto. I'm sorry, a Bayer.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got to tell you, I was watching Meet the Press on Sunday. And then after Meet the Press, it's just some sort of infomercial, you know, like whatever, Thighmaster or something. Something like some really funky thing goes on, because they buy it on Sundays in the middle of the day. You can buy time before the sports events occur. You know, it's like between news and football, there's a little bit of a hiatus and you can buy time. They had an infomercial from a law firm about glyphosate and about they're making a public awareness campaign about the cancer causing potential.
I watch Roku television. I don't have cable.
Yeah.
It's Roku, and there's something called Pluto, It's an app. It's almost like watching over-the-air TV. I see that
you cut
ad.
You cut the cord.
I cut the cord ages ago.
Yeah.
I see that ad happens. It's every other ad. It's that.
Yeah.
You used Roundup and now you have them?
Yeah, yeah. They're really circling the wagons.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is the other thing is, let's keep in mind they haven't banned, the EPA hasn't banned Roundup.
No.
And if indeed it was decisively proven that it was carcinogenic to the satisfaction of the government, it already is to the satisfaction of the World Health Organization, they would take it off the market.
Yeah.
They are taking it off the market in some municipalities, I think in some places in California. I think one part of de Blasio's initiative, you know, this like green initiative, you know, think of it what you will, because there's a lot wrong with that initiative. But I think he's banning the use of glyphosate in New York City, in the five
boroughs.
Well,
that would be one good thing he does.
Right. Okay. They could chalk it up. A broken clock is right, you know, at least a couple of times a day.
Right.
You know, okay. This is our mayor we're talking about, folks.
Yes, so it's our mayor, so we're allowed to talk about him.
If you're listening to this program
in New York City,
in Senegal, you may not know what we think of our mayor of New York, but most salty New Yorkers take a rather, shall we say, skeptical view of the mayor of New York. That's a tradition in New York.
Thank you for the rescue, Dr.
So but glyphosate is in the crosshairs. But I'm talking about the cancer thing. Mm-hmm. The cancer thing, I don't think, I mean, I've used glyphosate, and, you know, I'm pretty sure that through my limited exposure, knock wood, I'm not going to get, you know, immediate cancer. But the concern is, and this is an article that came out a couple of weeks ago, we highlighted it in this program, is the cross-generational effects of glyphosate, reproductive harms, developmental harms, that it has a very sort of gene-bending effect on the epigenetic expression of genes. It doesn't actually cause mutations, but it causes modifications in the way the genes are expressed to the third and fourth generation. So the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren can inherit these changes, according to research. So I think, you know, why do we tell people not to have GMOs? GMOs drive the use of glyphosate.
Exactly. And lots more use of glyphosate because the GMO plant is able to withstand.
It's resistant. Yeah,
it's
Roundup resistant.
Exactly.
Right. So that we then put a lot more glyphosate in the environment, on our foods. Mm-hmm. The GMO foods are likely to have more glyphosate. I mean, if you assay breakfast cereal is fairly high in glyphosate.
Yes. Yes, if you're having bread, if you're having pasta.
But it's harmless.
But if you're having potatoes, farmers still use this as a desiccant.
Right.
So unless you're buying organic produce and you're staying away from all those grains that are being harvested.
In short,
we
told you so.
Yeah.
We were right on this issue 10 years ago, you know, that, and at the time they were saying, oh, you know, it's like, you know, the anti-vaxxers or something.
Right,
the people who are against GMOs. GMOs progress. And we think that this is the way to feed the planet. And there's absolutely no harm associated with GMOs.
That's true. And it gets a little bit worse. Dr. Hoffman, as you know, now there are multi-Roundup resistant bacteria that are beginning to
flourish. You have to more other types of pesticides you have to use.
Pests that are beginning to.
Yeah, you have to use other weed killers and pesticides. Yeah,
antibiotic resistant. Yeah.
We're conflating a little bit because it's not pesticides, is more about, you know, insects and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we have all these chemicals that we use to keep the weeds away, to fight fungus, to do all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And
to wreak havoc on pests' nervous systems, the same thing can happen to us as well.
Right. And what they say is that, you know, through some miracle of biochemistry, that these things are deadly to the weeds, but have virtually no consequences for our mammalian cells.
How could that be?
Yeah. Well, theoretically, they should have been open to that possibility from the get-go.
Yeah.
And now we're discovering it only too late.
Right.
So it's another example of, you know...
another good reason to eat clean, eat organic.
Yep.
Make sure that you're not eating Roundup. Your bowl of pasta, your macaroni salad...
Short of filing a $1 billion lawsuit against Bayer, you know, maybe you didn't get non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Yeah.
So just don't buy those products.
Just don't buy those products. Exactly.
You know, vote with your consumer dollars, you know.
Yeah. Very important. Oh, golly. All right. Should we get on to questions?
Should we get on to questions? Yes.
Should we get on to questions?
Our rant is over.
We have an email from Diana. Hello. Thank you for all the helpful information in your newsletter. I have a question on vitamin K3. I thought K2 was the best form of vitamin K. Thank you for all that you do. Well, we know that there's K1, which we get from green leafy vegetables, kale, spinach, all of those. And then there is K2. Where,
and by the way, the K1 is something that promotes normal clotting.
Yes.
It allows, without adequate vitamin K, say you're in the intensive care unit and you're needing, you know, getting no vitamin K because you're having mush and gruel and no green leafy vegetables and fruit, and we've killed your microbiome, we've killed the beneficial bacteria in your intestinal tract with antibiotics, you get a vitamin K deficiency and all of a sudden it's you start to bleed and hemorrhage and nobody knows why. And now they're aware that vitamin K deficiency can occur in hospitalized patients.
Yeah. Is it still standard practice to inject every newborn with vitamin K? Isn't that something that's done with newborns?
Yes,
I wonder.
Yes. Yeah. I think that, I mean, I'm not a neonatal expert, but I think that was something that was done.
Yeah. Well, I took a look at the Vitamin D Council, Dr. John Cannell, and he's looked at a lot of the research. And apparently, recently, the mechanism by which the body turns vitamin K1 into K2 was clarified, and I'm getting to Diana's question. It occurs through an intermediary molecule, vitamin K3, which is made in the intestines from vitamin K1.
It's minadione.
Minadione,
you know what it says here in the Wikipedia article, the vitamin K3, because a synthetic form of vitamin K1, vitamin K3, may be toxic by interfering with the function of glutathione, is no longer used to treat vitamin K deficiency. Interesting.
And synthetic K3 of the minadione can be toxic. So the FDA has actually banned all synthetic vitamin K products from over-the-counter sale. And this is from the Vitamin and Mineral Safety third edition, 2013, from the Council for Responsible Nutrition at crnusa.org. So the synthetic vitamin K is not to be found or to be had or to be taken because it could be toxic.
They say that vitamin K3 is used in the pet food industry.
Huh.
And to inhibit fungal growth. But no, that's another one, vitamin K5.
Vitamin K5. There's a 4 and a 5 and all of that as well. So according to Dr. John Cannell, vitamin K3 is responsible for the conversion of K1 into K2 through minadione. So that's kind of how that works. K2 is very important, and hence the bodily conversion of it from K1. So, Diana, this is a very, very thoughtful question. So
there's
K3, it's part of the matrix of that turns it into the active or usable form.
Injection in newborns. The blood clotting factors of newborns are roughly 20 to 60% that of adult values. This may be due to the reduced synthesis of precursor proteins and the sterility of their guts. Well, because vitamin K is manufactured by the microbiome. So bleeding in infants due to vitamin K deficiency can be severe. Supplementation can prevent most cases of vitamin K deficiency bleeding in the newborn. Intramuscular administration, the vitamin K shot, is more effective in preventing late vitamin K deficiency bleeding than oral administration. As a result of the occurrence of vitamin K deficiency bleeding, the Committee on Nutrition of the American Academy of Pediatrics recommended that 0.5 to 1 milligram of vitamin K1 be administered to all newborns shortly after birth. So you're right there.
Okay, all right. That was something from my my undergrad
days. And for a while, there was a concern that this practice could lead to childhood cancer, but then they said, no, that was not a problem.
That's interesting. Okay.
All right. And, I, you know, breastfeeding is a bit of a hedge against that because then you get some vitamin K through the breast milk. So
in order for this conversion to take place, Dr. Hoffman, I imagine that, you know, a person's microbiota has to be healthy. Their gut has to be healthy. because it's an intestinal conversion from K1 to K2 with this intermediary metadione, which is K3. So take good care of your gut, everyone. All right.
Well, so it's actually a little, it's a little bit Chinese boxes, because we talk about vitamin K2 as beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Vitamin K2 has 9 related compounds.
Wow.
Of which MK7, MK8, MK9 are nutritionally the most recognized. MK4 also exists. So it's like Chinese box. You keep opening, you know, it's like vitamin K, K1, K2, K3.
Mm-hmm.
But also within the K2, there's, you open the Chinese boxes, you get more,
more
subtypes. And we think that the MK7 mm-hmm. is, you know, bioactive in terms of osteocalcin, which helps the osteoblasts in the formation of bone,
mm-hmm.
and also in matrix GLA protein,
yes.
which has something to do with calcification throughout the body. And, oh, by the way, there's even some stuff on vitamin K2 I read recently, and rheumatoid arthritis or osteoarthritis, because mm-hmm. calcification may occur.
Oh.
So you can actually, you know, like people say, oh, you know, I got a frozen shoulder. That's you'll see it calcified.
Yeah.
So
spurs and things.
Vitamin K may help prevent that.
Wow. Wow.
It basically sends calcium where it belongs.
Yeah. Yeah. We get small amounts of K2 in organ meats and cheese.
Aged cheese.
Not a whole lot.
Natto is a major source.
Natto, yeah, you'd have to be eating a lot of fermented soybeans.
Nobody likes natto.
Nobody, you'd have to be eating a lot of fermented soybeans to get your
When I was macrobiotic, I ate natto.
Yeah.
You know.
Terrific. Yeah. All right. Thank you for your question, Diana. All right. Oh, here's an email from Florence. Dear Dr. Hoffman, as a longtime listener to Intelligent Medicine on WOR Radio, I know of your expertise. Any chance you could recommend any supplements for our 10-year-old golden doodle who has preclinical mitral valve disease? Thank you very much.
When it comes to veterinary medicine, I'm a one-note Charlie. I only know one intervention that can be helpful. I know virtually nothing about animal physiology.
Uh-huh.
So, for example...
You're not a veterinarian.
I'm not a veterinarian. And I will, you know, accent all the syllables on that. But the, and this is an I don't want to rehash an oft-told anecdote, but actually I had a friend, I used to visit him periodically and, mm-hmm. you know, used to have 2 King Charles Terriers and he used to come rushing to the door, you know, yapping to greet me. And one day I knocked on the door and one of the little King Charles Terriers, you know, with the bulging eyes, they have the dogs that have the bulging eyes. They're frequently in paintings like by Velasquez, you know, of the Spanish nobility, because they're, anyway, they're an ancient breed of dog. So one of them comes to the door and the other one is like sitting there and just kind of like making its way sort of arduously to the door. And I said, what's wrong with that dog? It looks like it's pooping out. He goes, oh, yeah, that dog isn't long for this world because these dogs have hereditary mitral valve insufficiency. It's,
wow.
It's for that inbreeding, is that
yes.
some bad stuff
something,
happens.
Or with crossbreeding or something, and they wind up with...
Dog connoisseurs know that certain breeds are very prone to this or that or the other thing.
Yeah.
This one is prone to, from what I understand... some mitral valve problems, which lead to congestive heart failure and early death in those animals.
Yeah.
So I said to him, I said, well, you know, why don't you give him some coenzyme Q10? I'm extrapolating from humans. I'm thinking heart failure in humans, you give like 300-400. I said, this is a little dog. Go and get a bottle of like 30 or 60, you know, what would be an inadequate dose in humans, and give him one pill per day.
And his kibble.
So anyway, I didn't see the guy for a year. You know, I knocked on the door. Hello, how you doing? 2 dogs come to the door. And I go, well, I guess you replaced that dog, you know, that was, you know, so schleppy. And he said, no, he says, that's the dog.
Oh,
he said,
how wonderful.
You've completely, you've completely revived that dog. Because he's getting more mileage out of his leaky mitral valve. Because they don't do operations on leaky mitral valve in dogs. In humans, of course, they don't, they will do the intervention. But such a tiny heart. And such a radical intervention for a dog. And, you know, animals don't tolerate surgery as well as humans. They don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And they for them, it's like a, like an insult, a wound. Their bodies go into kind of a shock. So you don't want to do, I mean, you do minor surgery on animals, but like very radical life-saving surgery on animals that's like heart surgery on humans is not apparently that thought to be that favorable. Although more and more that's being done. You know, people want to save their animals. They spend a lot of money on their animals rather than putting them down. So that's...
So for Florence's Golden Doodle, 30 milligrams?
Well, I don't know. Those are big dogs, aren't
they? They're bigger dogs,
I think. So like 60?
Yeah.
You know, it's like a 40, 50-pound dog.
Right. There you go.
What's a Golden Doodle? It's like a poodle with a golden retriever?
I don't know. I actually don't know.
It's like one curly-haired dog and one you know, straight-haired dog.
But I imagine it still might be poodle size, but poodles can get quite big as well. So I'm not sure. But Florence will know. And Florence, you compare your dog size to a King Charles and dose accordingly, I suppose.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Thank you for that question.
That'll be $50, please. I mean, veterinary visits are cheaper than doctor visits. Okay. We're going to allow one of our sponsors to share this important message with you. So listen up. Here goes.
Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and as a listener of Intelligent Medicine, you can try a bottle of their finest artisanal olive oil, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. I've been enjoying these harvest fresh olive oils for years. They are far and away the brightest, most lively, and flavorful olive oils I've ever tasted. Their antioxidants and polyphenols are off the charts because they're fresh from the harvest. They make store-bought olive oils taste dull and flat by comparison. Taste for yourself. Check out this generous trial offer and get your $39 bottle for a buck with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by ProPax with NT Factor, a complete vitamin and mineral formula. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor repairs damaged cells, restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years, and now the 45-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. And Layla, let us know what we're going to be talking about in part two, because we've got to do a break, and then we'll return for more questions.
Okay. I'm 72, and I'm looking for a minimum of brain supplements that will benefit my memory. Is there anything where I could just take one tablet a day? What is your recommendation?
Okay, that's an interesting question. I'm Dr. Ronald Hobbs today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and we'll be back for more. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.